This is Daltonian STFs, and you're listening to Verbally Challenged.
Jose, if you're working from home, you got yourself a comfortable chair.
I gotta get one. Like, this chair is on its last legs. My girl's like, get a pink gaming chair. I'm like, a pink gaming chair? What the hell? What's up, everybody? Harrick and BX here, and welcome back to Verbally Challenged. I have a couple of very special guests here with me tonight, and let's introduce them. First up, back once again, the analyzer, Brian Brink. What's up, dude?
What's up, man? I'm just a special guest. Don't call me very special.
You don't want the very special guest moniker? Come on.
No. So I'm here because I got a link sent to me, and I just like clicking on links, and that's what happens, and I end up showing up talking to you guys.
Nice.
What do I know about the subject at hand? I've seen the movie twice.
I guess we'll see. We'll see how you feel about it. Or maybe me and Jason talking about it will help you form your opinion like the way it did for BBS a few weeks ago, you know?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
We'll see.
Speaking of which, after listening to all my friends talk about that movie after we did that, I need to lower my score. That movie's not as good as I thought it was.
All right. Another special guest. We got Jason Lowry. What's up, dude?
Hey, what's up, dude? Thanks for having me on here. Glad to be back.
No doubt. I think this particular subject matter on tonight's episode is very near and dear to your heart, somewhat of a aficionado. So very, very interested to kind of hear your thoughts like on all this. And I got questions because I think, as I mentioned, you know, and we did like a watch party and sort of watched this a couple of nights ago, if you're listening to this on Monday. It was kind of cool to do that because it kind of felt like, you know, we're all in the theater watching a movie with our buddies and stuff like that. It had been a while. And if you're listening, I'm definitely planning on doing that this weekend for WrestleMania, Saturday and Sunday. So if you're part of the Realm of Collectors Facebook group or in the Rock and Wrestling group, I'm going to be throwing a link out there to stream WrestleMania. I'm all signed up to Peacock and everything. I had to fucking do it. They're making you switch over. I actually tried to log into the WWE Network, and it says, we've moved to Peacock. Sign up over there. I'm like, damn, man. It just feels weird because I was a day one subscriber to that, but I guess it just wasn't lucrative enough, and they had to pass it on. But at least we'll still get the monthly pay-per-views for the one price. So, I mean, it's fine. It's the same. Peacock is the same price that I was paying for the WWE Network. So it's like I still get the network plus everything else Peacock has to offer. So I guess that makes it a pretty good deal. So if anybody's interested, I'm going to be streaming WrestleMania. That's April 10th and 11th. It's a two-night event. So keep a lookout in the Realm of Collectors Facebook group and in the Rock and Wrestling group if you're a fan. And also, before we get into the movie that we're going to talk about, there's also another wrestling event at the end of April, pretty big, Impact Wrestling pay-per-view, which I know a lot of people don't really watch Impact, but they have a crossover between themselves and AEW. And first time ever, you're going to have a AEW World Champion versus the Impact World Champion title. And they guaranteed, you know, one of those guys walking away with both belts, which is kind of major in professional wrestling. If anybody knows, these are two separate companies that are doing interpromotional work, which you never usually see. So pretty interesting times. I'll be streaming that as well. So keep a lookout for that, and I'll be promoting it on future episodes. So Brink, Jason, thank you guys for joining me. We're going to discuss Godzilla versus Kong, which was just recently released on HBO Max. God bless HBO Max, man. Getting these blockbuster fucking releases straight into our own homes. Don't have to worry about fucking paying inflated ticket prices or dealing with other loudmouths at the movie theater, even though a movie like this, I feel like, kind of deserves that theater experience. And Jason, I think you did go see it in IMAX. So how was it, dude? Because a lot of us haven't been to the movies in probably a year plus.
Well, we saw it twice.
Twice in IMAX? Nice.
Yeah, no, so what happened was we got tickets through AMX theaters and all that.
Okay.
And so the IMAX stuff, we ended up going through them. the first one we went to see was an IMAX, and we had press passes for it, like to go see it ahead of time. And they actually asked our opinions on the film, like, you know, stuff like, I think, who was it? CineScore was there, Rotten Tomatoes, and some other people were there, taking people's thoughts, basically like test screening. That's basically what they did the first night. That was Wednesday night. And then it was actually a pretty fun experience. I mean, just seeing it up on the big screen and hearing all the roars and the rumbling and the bass and everything fucking vibrating around you, it was just amazing.
yeah, I could imagine. And to me, that's the allure of seeing something like this in like an IMAX. Because, I mean, if anybody hasn't seen a movie in IMAX format, I mean, the screen is fucking huge. The sound quality is, like, incredible. Like, it's just it's another experience, you know what I'm saying? Especially for tentpole blockbuster movies. Like, I think I saw BVS like that. I think I saw Star Wars Episode 3 like that back in the day. There's a bunch of movies. Like, I can't tell you every single one, but each experience has definitely been worth it. Usually for some big blockbuster superhero movie, and it's always been worth it to me. But of course, you know, ticket prices are higher, but the experience that you get is also a much better experience that you'd usually get like in a normal theater. So, I mean, I opted out. Like, I mean, I guess I'm open to going to the flicks and stuff like that. But, you know, like I said, I guess with HBO Max, man, if I'm already paying the $15 a month and they're giving this shit to me and I can watch it in the comfort of my own home and, you know, have a brew and smoke a L, I'm gonna relax and chill. You know, I was considering doing it for Black Widow, you know, because I think Disney's trying to get extra money out of you and they're not just giving it to you if you're a Disney Plus subscriber. So I'm just you know, Max has shown us the way. You know, if you're going to try to get extra money out of me when I'm already paying you a monthly subscription, you know what, then maybe I'll just go for the theater experience instead of paying Disney.
So speaking of the theater experience, it was definitely interesting. So when you went to go do the tickets, the first night we went, Wednesday night, the tickets were free because they were the press pass
tickets. Yeah.
But the second night we went to see it, we actually saw it in Dolby Digital, like the full, it's basically like IMAX, basically, at AMC Theaters. And so when you went that time, we actually bought tickets. And Thursday night, we went to buy the tickets. And then come to find out, when you went in the Fandango app, when you went to buy them, it automatically told you, you can't buy tickets within like two chairs or somebody.
Okay.
And then if you tried to, it wouldn't let you do it. It blocked you from doing it. Mm-hmm. And so it basically, any two or four chairs around one single individual person, like they won't let you buy any chairs at all. So they definitely have been kind of cracking down on all that. So.
Okay. So, and that's interesting because, I mean, I used to use all those apps and stuff. And I did actually try... That's like a test run. I was like, let me see what happens. And I did put in for two tickets for this movie at the local like AMC or whatever, but through the Atom app. I usually use the Atom app to purchase tickets, or I used to, you know, pre-COVID. So doing that, I was like, I saw a bunch of seats and I was like, okay, let me see if it will let me select them. So I did select, you know, a couple of seats that I thought were available. But then when I try to check out, it didn't let me saying, you know, I guess the same thing because, you know, the seats around them were already selected. I thought it would have automatically sort of made it easier for you and just automatically like blocked them off. So whatever shows up blue, I guess you could consider like a safe seat, but it seems like it's a crapshoot, like in that app right now where it's like you select seats and it just might not let you check out. So you're going to have to keep trying to select and see if it lets you go through. So to me, like, that sounds like a lot of trouble. You know, I guess maybe I'll hit the movies when it's a little bit easier. It's the same reason why I quit a gym membership, man. And listen, it's all for safety. I get it. You know, the times we're living in is no joke. But I'm paying for a gym membership every month and they set up a system, you know, which you have to check in through the app and reserve time ahead of time. And whenever I'm going into the app to see what sessions are available, there's nothing available, you know? So it's like, why am I paying that then? You know, so it kind of, you know, I get it, you know, all these extra precautions, but it does make something like going to the gym or the movies, you know, a lot more difficult than the experience used to be. So how was it, dude? Like, did you enjoy like going and seeing like a movie like this? I mean, to me, all the bells and whistles must have been worth it. I mean, these two titans fucking went at each other. How was it?
So it was pretty good. So, like I said, we went into the theater, people are all standing back for one another. You had your assigned time when you came in, you checked in and you sat down, and then you just waited till the next people. Mm-hmm. And in the theater before you got in, I think they gave like an hour in between each viewing because, mm-hmm. man, I saw the crews go in there. They were sterilizing everything as soon Sweet. As we walked in.
Nice.
So, but yeah, we sat down, we started watching the movie, and, you know, the first thing you see is like Kong on the screen. And like Bethany said, she saw my eyes light up huge. they said my eyes were huge when I saw that.
Yeah.
And then, it's just the experience of seeing that on the screen and sitting next to her. And it was like I was a kid again watching the Godzilla films in the theater when I was a kid. So
yeah,
it was a fun time, you know, spending it with her because she didn't get to really experience any of that. She wasn't into that as a kid, but she likes the films now. And so it was kind of funny. I was kind of teasing her a little bit. She they actually had the transducers or whatever in the back of the seats that vibrated everything, even the seats you're sitting in.
Oh, nice. So it makes like it even more immersive. Was vibrating. Yeah.
So it was funny. Yeah. We towards the end of the film, and we'll get into the film experience, talking to the film, but towards the end of the film, we got up, like both of us were shaking because like our whole it was literally like sitting in a massage chair the whole entire time.
Yeah. Cause I mean, that fucking fight, we'll definitely get into it, but the final battle, I mean, that was probably like the last half an hour of the movie, 40 minutes maybe. So that is nonstop. Probably both busted nuts by the end of that movie, right?
Oh yeah, and it was crazy. Like it was funny. I looked over at Bethany and like all his seats are vibrating, and I gave her a high five. She's like, "What was that for?" And I was like, "That's less I got to do."
Exactly, you know, she's worked up already.
Yeah. It was a pretty good time. We had a lot of fun. She had a lot of fun. You know, she got her popcorn and you know all that,
which is part of the experience. Yeah, that theater ask experience.
About that. Yeah. You guys do the snacks, so, and all that stuff.
Yeah, so we did the snacks. So you went up to the front, and instead of you pumping the butter, they give it to you and melt it in the cups already.
Oh, nice!
And so that way they pre-do it. They had masks on, they had gloves on, like the whole thing.
Like, you'd be like, "Yo, I need like 10 of those." You know, fucking drown that popcorn in the butter.
Yeah, and Bethany, she did a bunch of those. She got a couple. She got a big old thing. But the prices for the all the food and everything went way up.
Mm.
Like for a small thing of popcorn, it was like $12.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's usually the large. That's the large price. So that's interesting because cities here, I'm not going to say, I mean, I said cities, restaurants here in the city, mm-hmm. not all of them, but some of them have started charging what they sort of call like a COVID tax, which is sort of like an extra tax, I guess, just to make up for some of the lost revenue from the months and months and months that they were forced to stay closed, you know. And you know what? Honestly, people here are so good about it that they're like, they even give extra because they kind of understand and want to help, you know, and patronize and stuff like that. You know, of course, you got those that bitch and stuff. But I was also wondering, like, if, you know, other industries like the movie theaters that got hit hard during this pandemic, if they would kind of take actions to sort of recoup that lost revenue.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they got any bailout money or whatever, but I've seen a lot of theaters, like when traveling around the city, that are closed, you know, and unfortunately, it's the side effect of what happened. So that's unfortunate. That sucks that, you know, you pay a little extra, but I guess, you know, you understand why.
Yeah. But I mean, in the realization of the whole entire thing, we haven't been in a movie theater in a year. So paying that like $15 or whatever it was for her large popcorn or something like that. Right, it's like, whatever. I'm fine with it.
Exactly.
I haven't gone to a theater in God knows how long. So.
Yeah. So the way you said that, like she saw your face light up when you saw Kong on the screen, you know, obviously you're a big fan. Brink, like what's your level of fandom when it comes to either Godzilla or King Kong? Like, have you peeped those old school movies back in the day? Or are you just sort of like a casual, you know?
I remember, I think like my parents showing me the original King Kong, like way back when, and you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Godzilla, I do remember seeing the one with Perry Mason in it, Raymond Burr. It was basically a remake of the 1954. And it's kind of interesting because they're both on HBO Max. I think they're both on the HBO Max because the 1954 one, of course, is all subtitles. It's all in Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you watch, I think it's called Godzilla I want to say King of Monsters. I think it was with the remake.
I saw one on HBO Max, old school. That's called that. So you're probably
yeah,
right.
And basically, yeah. It's the same movie. They just cut in the Perry Mason stuff, the Raymond Burr actor, and other stuff, and they dubbed it in English. And I think they actually had some other English dialogue too. But it was like you could see like how it was intercut and stuff. It's like, dude, movie magic back in the day. I was just like, you know what, this is like. It's like you can't tell. It's like it was really, really cool. But anyway, I remember watching that, and you know, basically, it's all in black and white, and Godzilla's a, you know, basically a giant Muppet when you look at his face, you know, kind of stuff.
Oh God, and, it was so bad back then.
But it's so interesting though, because like the way they film it, like the mountains, you just kind of see the top of his head moving across. Yeah. It's kind of scary, and then I remember. Back when video stores started opening up, my best friend up the block, he's like, dude, you gotta rent, I think it was called like Godzilla 84.
Yeah, 1984, yeah.
Godzilla 1984. And, dude, I remember really, I remember renting that multiple times. You know, it was really good. And other than that, like, that's it, man. I think I may have seen, like, the Mechagodzilla once. I may have seen the Mothra one once. Mm-hmm. I never saw any of, like, the three-headed guys, the King Ghidorah. I never saw the Raiden ones. I never saw... I think I saw the baby Godzilla one once.
Oh, yeah.
But the Son of Godzilla or whatever it is. And then it was the Broderick thing. I was like, whatever, you know. And then... And then when we got the re-release, what was that, 2014 or whatever?
14, yeah.
The reboot. Mm. It's like it's fucking cool, man. I was so close to buying the 2-foot-tall. I think it was made by NECA. I was so close to buying it to put it next to my Metroplex. Think about
that's
it.
Awesome. That would
a fucking
be cool.
City transforms into a robot to defend itself against a giant lizard, as opposed to just being stomped on by a lizard.
That's pretty cool, that correlation right there. The city actually defending itself.
Yeah, and then it was like, but I was looking at it, and like the articulation was best. I wouldn't even be able to get these guys into a pose fighting each other. I was like, the hell with it. I'm sure somebody's done it, though. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's interesting that you enjoyed that 2014 version enough to maybe get a huge Godzilla figure and just throw it there like in your collection. Oh, I always call that the fever, man. You watch something, you like it, and then you're looking for the fucking media and the toys and the shit that you could buy around it, you know, like so I mean, I wasn't gonna ask, so I mean, you basically already answered it. I'm not too familiar with the older stuff. I've always seen the older stuff like in passing. I remember watching the original Godzilla like when I was young. The original King Kong, of course, you know, just looks so bad, those old school movies compared to what we get now. So I'd probably be even a harder watch, and I know they're on Max, so I kind of want to go back and just to be like, okay, let me watch this with adult eyes and, you know, and see if I could be like, can I watch this or no? No,
I'm just gonna let you know ahead of time. I've tried to go back and like,
and you can't, right?
I got other things I gotta watch.
That's how I feel like I'm gonna be. Like, I gotta watch the fucking last Friday's Falcon and Winter Soldier instead, you know? But I'm gonna try. I'll see. And then, but I did, you know, watch that Matthew Broderick one from the 90s, which, you know, whatever, that was what it was, but it's not like that that Japanese style you know, Godzilla movie at all. Definitely Americanized.
I'll tell you what though, the angry video game nerd guy on his Cinemassacre channel, he actually put a brief kind of video together, be like, you know, if you want to go back and get a history of Godzilla, he's like, here's the films that I recommend that you watch. And it was actually, I watched it yesterday. I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty good. It's like, you don't have to watch that many of them to kind of get the full effect.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll check that out. You know, so that 90s one was what it was. And then, you know, that Peter Jackson Kong movie, right? Was it Peter Jackson that did it?
It's basically just a direct, almost like a direct remake from the
original. The remake of the original one from the 30s, right? So, I mean, I thought that was fine for what it was because, of course, you got the modern effects and everything. So they just made it look really good. But, Brian, like you said, that Godzilla reboot from 2014, I was like, wow, like this is good. Like he looked almost like the Japanese version, but a little bit different, like, you know, but not so different, like the way they made him look in the 90s. Like the 90s version looked different, you know. This one looked a lot more sort of like Godzilla, but yeah, had its own little modern take on it as well. And I loved the way they did it. And those two Moguls or whatever they called it, Motu, that they called them, those two things he was fighting. Like, I thought that was cool. I thought the battle at the end was dope. You know, like you guys had mentioned, you know, in the past, a little hard to see maybe or whatever. But I mean, I thought that was good. And but I never followed up like on the sequels. Like, I know we got Skull Island in 2017. I think we got King of the Monsters in 2019. So I'm going to go back and watch those. Oh, yeah. But I mean, you know, for this one, I felt like, you know, Kong versus Godzilla. Like, do you really need to know what the fuck is going on? Like, just watch the fucking movie because you know you're there for the fight.
Do you need a story, really?
You know, like,
you just want to see some shit get wrecked.
Exactly. You know, to me, it's like Pacific Rim sort of deal. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just here for the fucking giant robots fucking fighting monsters in the fucking city. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that's basically what you could expect here. And if that's all you expected, I'm sure you're very happy. You know, getting into the film itself, listen, I'm not a film critic. I'm not the type that looks at a film to break it down and be like, this is trash, this is trash. Generally, I'll watch a film and it has to be like really bad for me to be like, I didn't enjoy this. Like, you know what I'm saying? This was a fun romp. Like, you know what I'm saying? And it kind of makes me want to go back and watch Skull Island fully because I've only seen it like in bits and pieces, never beginning to end. And I haven't seen any of King of the Monsters. And you know, me and Brian and you were talking about it and, you know, a little bit about what happened in the last movie and how sort of Godzilla is seen by the people almost like a protector of the planet, like with all these other monsters and stuff like that, you know. So Brian mentioned there's a lot of fights in King of the Monsters, so I'm gonna go back and watch that and check it out. But
It's not just that, too. What's kind of interesting is throughout all the years, all the Godzilla films, and I think there's, what, like 36 or 37 of them, something like that, since 54. And that's including some of the animation ones. But throughout the years, they kind of threw in the old Godzilla film, and you'll kind of see it when you watch it, where a lot of the old school music, they paid homage whatever to actually all the older stuff, and that's where you kind of see in like this latest series since Kong Skull Island up and through now. So that's what's kind of fun about it, like being a Godzilla fan like I am. This is how much of a geek I am about this shit. So every Sunday since I was a kid, since I got into Godzilla, I watch one Godzilla film. Even now.
nice.
So yeah.
So you must like know all of them, like, you know, like the back of your hand pretty much at this point. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's cool. That's cool. That's nice to kind of have a tradition like or a routine like that. And what you said about the music, you know what? That was very noticeable watching this film. When you saw Kong and when you saw like Godzilla on the screen, the music that played was it did sound like very old school, that dun, 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 dun. Like it didn't sound old like that. But you could tell that the homage was there. And I didn't remember that in the 2014 movie. Like, it was a new score. Like, it was played very realistic. And that's another thing I have to say about this movie, too, is that from just seeing that 2014 Godzilla and then seeing Godzilla versus Kong, they took a big turn into the fantastic, like, with this movie. Like, and listen, I get the subject matter. You know, we're dealing with giant lizards and fucking giant apes and all that shit. So I'm not saying these movies have to be the bastion of realism. But the 2014 version was pretty realistic except for the giant monsters. You know what I'm saying? And you saw it sort of, like, from the army's point of view and them having to deal with, like, these fucking giant things and what do we do, you know? And now all of a sudden we got fucking flying cars and we're traveling between the U.S. and Hong Kong in 20 minutes. And fucking, like, you know, it was just like, you know, a lot of stuff that I was just like, wow, it's fantastic. Doesn't bring down the movie at all to me, but it was just a very stark contrast compared to Godzilla 2014 to this. And the bits and pieces I saw of Skull Island kind of opened it up a little bit more to that. And I'm just assuming King of the Monsters must have just, you know, bust that door wide open. I'm not sure or not, but
No, it definitely did. King of the Monsters, I think I watched it once And I just remember being like, dude, they're throwing everything in here now. It's like no holds barred. It's like, yeah, you know what? It's like, we're not looking to make a masterpiece here, but I guess they already knew it was going to be a trilogy. So it's like, let's throw it all in there, you know? It's like, mm-hmm. just do it. And then for this one too, it's like, sure, it's just the two main characters, but hey, where's that third character? Like, I had no idea this was coming. Yeah. And it was just, and of course the whole Hollow Earth thing, like, just for fun. Let's see what that's all about.
Dude, the best way to describe this film is what I say last night, or when we were on the watch party, said it's Godzilla meets Journey to the Center of the Earth, meets Pacific Rim is the best way I described it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just the way it went. Yeah.
It's a very apt description of like what this is. And I mean, listen, and it was a fun romp. You know, I think anybody that was anticipating watching this is probably got exactly what they wanted. I mean, to be able to see these two titans on screen going at it, like with modern effects. I mean, it was incredible. And the way they broke it down. So, I mean, let's just get into the movie. I'm assuming this picked up sort of, I guess, where Skull Island and then King of Monsters left off. We see Kong is in a containment. He's not very happy being there. The movie also opens up with Godzilla destroying a facility of a company called Apex, which you find they're the main drivers of what was the plot was in this film, which is basically they're building a weapon to basically replace Godzilla. And that's basically the catalyst of Godzilla basically attacking the land and attacking people again, because they, like Brian had mentioned to me, they consider him like a savior and protector of humanity. Yep. But here he was destroying a facility, and nobody knew why. And as the plot thickened, you come to find out that this company was building its own Mecha Godzilla to basically kill Godzilla, but also defend themselves against other titans. And so humans could once again be the apex species on the planet. And in this movie, through, you know, the dialogue and everything, apparently, you know, Godzilla, you know, is an alpha titan as such, that he's able to sense other threats to himself, you know, or other threats to the planet. So he's just able to sort of home in and seek them out. You know what I'm saying? So that was kind of like the setup. Nobody knew why Godzilla attacked again. You know, so they recruit a scientist who had this theory in what's called Hollow Earth, where they think all these titans came from. He even told the doctor that, I forget the character's name. I'm not sure if you remember, Jason, the female.
Eileen or something like that.
Like she was like basically Kong's handler. On Skull Island, and he basically joined up with her and had a theory like, hey, if we could, you know, bring Kong to, you know, the entrance to Hollow Earth, he could lead us to a power source that will hopefully protect us from Godzilla, because Godzilla's attacking again. We don't know why. We got to protect ourselves.
So, you know, real quick, the scientist guy, I mean, if I remember correctly, it looks like this guy's kind of down on his luck or something, or he's like sitting in a room full of trash. I can't remember what the hell it was.
He seemed like he was like a crackpot because of that Hollow Earth theory. Well,
right.
Nobody took
he wrote
seriously.
A book or something like that, right? And so basically, this company is hiring him for an opportunity to basically do what he wants to do again. Mm-hmm. But he has no idea why. Did they tell him about the power source or whatever? And he's like, oh, sure, whatever.
They didn't get into specifics, but the guy did the businessman or whatever, I forget his name. He did say that whatever's in Hollow Earth is the key for them to protect themselves. Like, he didn't get into the specifics that they needed a power source for what they were building, but it was basically in defense of humanity is why we need to do this, you know? You know, it, like you said, down on his luck, he said his office was moved into the basement across from like the kitchen or something. Like, they basically, that book he wrote with his theories on Hollow Earth, he was considered a crackpot.
Well, nobody it's also believed. Too that he worked for Monarch, and his brother got killed trying to go to Hollow Earth, basically.
Yep.
That's what it was.
Yep. So, you know, so apparently this Apex company has all sorts of advanced technology. You know, basically they said they have a craft that would be able to take him to Hollow Earth and, you know, search for that power source that could save humanity. the plan was hatched, where basically, you know, I guess Kong, they would lead, you know, take Kong to Antarctica, which is where the entrance to Hollow Earth is, and he would basically lead them to the power source. I like that that doctor brought up to Kong's handler also how they brought up how Skull Island is like a piece of Hollow Earth, almost like come up to the surface, right? And that's how, like, on that island, you got like all these monsters and shit.
And
like
if
that,
you
right?
if you watch that movie, that kind of fills that in for you.
It does. Yeah. Those last two films fill that in.
The Skull Island movie kind of talk about that.
Okay, because again, I haven't seen that movie in full, so I wasn't sure if there was any correlation there. But I did dig that link, like when he said that, like, because it kind of ties this theory into what that Skull Island is. Because I'm like, okay, so I didn't see it. So I'm like, but there's an island out there that's just prehistoric, kind of like, you know, like Dinobot Island on the Transformers, right?
Exactly.
Like, so,
yeah.
It's not a far-fetched concept. We've heard of it before, so I didn't really think much of it. But I like that they connected it to what's going on here with the main thing that they were trying to do in this film. So, you know, basically they're transporting Kong to Antarctica. And I like that scientists say, like, hey, man, if we take Kong off Skull Island, Godzilla's going to come for him. Like, again, they said how Godzilla could sense other threats and other titans. And, you know, and I like that montage at the beginning of the movie where they were showing, like, the titans that Kong faced and the titans that Godzilla faced and how they all had been defeated, you know, like, so these
especially
two are like the
March
alpha
madness
titans.
During March Madness, that whole bracket.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so they basically set them up like Kong's an alpha titan, Godzilla's an alpha titan, and you could only have one, you know? So I dug that too, that they were kind of like Godzilla could sense that, you know, we're trying to be careful, stay out of the waters that Godzilla's sort of known to be in. And leading up on that voyage is where we got that first major, you know, battle between these two. Before I get to that, though, there is another subplot of what's her name? Millie Bobby Brown, a maintenance guy that works for Apex and Millie Bobby Brown's friend. Like, they're on their own, like, little, like, side journey trying to find out what Apex is up to. They don't trust the company. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that guy that works for the company has his own, like, conspiracy podcast where he's like, this is what's really going on and such and such. So that was also, like, a thread that was kind of playing throughout the movie along with the main storyline.
Bernie Hayes, right? Something like that?
Yeah. Oh, Bernie. Yeah, that was the character's name.
And Jose, like, Millie Bobby Brown's concern with Godzilla, when you watch the King of Monsters one, you'll see why she's so interested in his well-being.
Okay, guys, a quick timeout so I can put you on to the Realm of Collectors. The Realm of Collectors is an online community of friends that have become like family with a shared goal of providing a space where you can share your hobbies and chat with others that have similar interests. Subscribe today to the Realm of Collectors YouTube channel and hit that bell for all notifications. The Realm goes live almost every day of the week with several podcasts like Enter the Realm, Breaking the Mold, Figure Banging, and MPSP Theater. Go to youtube.com today to subscribe. Visit our website, realmofcollectors.com. On the site is a blog section with entries provided by members of the community just like you. A gallery of toy photography from members all over the world that have used the hashtag Realm of Collectors on Instagram. Links to all the podcasts at the Cool Table Podcast Network and our contact information in case you have any inquiries about the Realm. Don't forget to join our online community on Facebook. The group name is Realm of Collectors. Answer the three questions and boom, you're in. Follow us on Instagram at Realm of Collectors and follow the hashtag Realm of Collectors for all the latest toy news and updates on all the happenings in the group. So what are you waiting for? Search Realm of Collectors online right now and join the Realm community. See you there.
When watching this, and I think I remember in a watching trailers for King of the Monsters, and I remember seeing her face, like her character or whatever. So I knew she was like from that movie. But honestly, like, even though they kind of did have a role to play, like, in the end, I could have done without, like, honestly, all that shit, even though it was played for comic relief and it was funny. But I felt like, man, like, leading up to like that first fight, about 40 or 45 minutes into the movie, we could have gotten there maybe a little quicker, could have maybe shaved a little bit, because it was funny, I guess, but I'm just like, that was probably maybe something that brought the movie down for me, because it was just a lot of convenience when it came to these characters doing what they were doing and infiltrating the company and getting from point A to point B, like, with very little trouble. And, you know,
she knew all the codes, 1, 2, 3 to get through everything.
You know, it's this fucking top secret, highly advanced fucking company, you know, but they're fucking walking through corridors, no security, like getting through fucking these high-tech doors, like just figuring out the fucking code, or he's putting the fucking screwdriver into the thing and opening the door. Like, so again, this is a movie that don't ask these type of questions. Just turn your fucking brain off. But if you're going to ask those type of questions, this is the type, those little kind of plot holes that you can see there. Just very convenient to move the story along, you know?
But it is. Yeah. I mean, they do kind of just move the story around, and they give you a point of view for yourself to see what's kind of going on. Like, basically you're seeing what they're seeing, mm-hmm. as opposed to them just as opposed to just the movie taking you to the facility and like, here's right. the bad guys talking and plotting and stuff like that. You basically are infiltrating and just watching what's happening. But mm-hmm. from a pacing perspective, I like the fact that I didn't get bored with the right. side story. Like, okay. it was very quick and stuff. I mean, this movie like you said before, you knew it. The first fight's not 45 minutes in, but you feel like you were only watching the movie for 5 minutes. And then it's like they get you to the good stuff. It's like they don't leave you waiting. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very well-edited movie, I think, in that
regard. No, it is. And I think that what helped is that they didn't try to make it like a three-hour film. Like, I think like before you get to the credits, like the movie clocks in at about 1:45, 1:50, which to me is like is good. Like, you could probably even done 90 minutes. And told something solid and had gotten something, you know, mm-hmm. really, really tight. But like you're saying, like, to me, wasn't a big fan of like this part of the story, but like it didn't really, you know, like I said, it sort of brought the movie down a little bit mm-hmm. to me, but it's not something that like I would say I hated or whatever. Cause again, it does pay off in the end. Like, them doing what they did and getting to the point that they did at the end of the movie did help fucking Kong and Godzilla do what they needed to do when we get there. You know,
like Brian said previously, like, once you see the previous two films, you'll understand why that they were doing that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was when the attack happened on the facility in the beginning of the film, and you saw this round orb after the guy Bernie saw this round orb when he was going through the facility, and you saw it blinking, and you didn't know what it was. But when you heard the sound, if you watched Godzilla 2014, you understand what it is.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I want to ruin it to you, if it doesn't really matter or what, but it kind of ties into this, and that's why those subplots were there. I mean, I kind of understood why, but I think mm-hmm. some of it could have cut down a little bit.
Yeah.
But I still enjoyed it. Like Brian said, I had a fun time. I wasn't bored one bit.
Yeah, yeah. To me, that was more of the comic relief, something that kept you chuckling. Like to me, like, we watched it. Me and Jesse watched it because we're just, you know, having a lazy day, and, you know, like, let's throw this on. And, you know, those were the scenes where she was kind of like chuckling at and stuff like that because of what they were doing.
That's what was great.
And,
you know, like usually when they toss that shit in there, it's just awful. But like this stuff was silly, not stupid, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And that's why
he was like. Yeah. Awkwardly funny, right? Like,
yeah,
yeah. So you know, it was fine. Like, to hear her chuckle, and again, like, this type of movie is not like her type of subject matter. Like, and we watched it, and she kind of like, she enjoyed it. She dug the fight. She thought the special effects were good. You know, and that's what you would expect. You know, so I mean, that was a subplot. Like I said, we got to the part where they're transporting Kong. So this is where we get to that first big fight between Kong and Godzilla. So he senses Kong in the waters, and he goes to take care of him. And obviously, you know, being, you know, in the ocean, Godzilla had the advantage here. And you know what I'm saying? Kong is chained to that ship. You know, you see he has a relationship with this deaf girl, like, in the movie, that's sort of like a surrogate daughter for the handler, the doctor.
Her name was Gia, I think. Yeah.
Was she in a previous film, or this is the first time you're seeing her here?
First time seeing her.
First time seeing her here.
She was her family in the subplot of all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Her family was actually on Skull Island. She was a part of the indigenous people, and they got wiped out when a giant storm came through. That's where they kind of explained when they were on the ship before the fighting happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you could see that she has like a connection with Kong. Like, you know, he has a connection with her. That he protects her. You know, they seem like they were able to communicate, and come to find out is, you know, she's deaf, communicates through sign language, and apparently that's how she was communicating with Kong, you know, and so she basically knew like his feelings and how he felt. And the doctor, you know, that was a thing in the movie where she was like, man, like, why didn't you tell me? You know, I'm trying to communicate with him and to try to understand him. And the little girl said Kong didn't want you to know that he could communicate. Right. He's just scared, you know. And
amazing.
I thought it was so good, you know. And the lady was like, man, he just doesn't realize that we want to help him, you know. And again, it's true. And you don't blame that, because, I mean, a big monster like that, you know, everybody's first reaction is shoot him, kill him. You know what I'm saying? Like, pull a gun on him. And mm-hmm. you know, so I thought that was a nice little kind of thing, the connection between Kong and the girl. And once those other characters realized it, they basically wanted to use that connection to their advantage for the rest of the film to try to get Kong to do like what they wanted to do as far as leading them to Hollow Earth, you know. So this first fight between them in the ocean like was awesome. You know, I thought it looked great. Like, I think, Jason, you brought up when we were doing the watch party, like how like even like the water coming off Kong's fur, like the way it looked and stuff, yeah. like that, like really, really solid special effects here.
Well, there was only one spot, and Brian picked it out. Was it Brian that picked it
with
out?
The fish, the fish eating. Scene. Yeah. My girl said yuck when she saw that, you know, because you see the fucking the fish and the blood in his mouth. Just, yeah, you know, so. But this was cool, man. Like, it was a good fight. You know, Kong, you know, he tried, but he was basically outmatched. You know, Godzilla is able to breathe underwater. You know, he's able to swim underwater with ease. And you saw a couple of times, like, Godzilla almost tried to drown Kong, like, here.
Oh, yeah.
And if it wasn't for them, you know, the humans dropping, like, the depth charges and stuff to, I guess, mm-hmm. stun Godzilla, Kong would have drowned, because you saw it. Godzilla was bringing him underwater, like had his tail wrapped around him, and then he was bringing him down, and he couldn't get out. And I guess the depth charges, you didn't see it underwater, but you saw them go off, and then all of a sudden Kong made his way to the surface,
right? Because collapsed to me, on the boat. To me, how would the depth charges not hurt him too?
Exactly.
Right? but you know what? I'm not gonna dwell on stuff like that. What I loved most about this first fight was the fact that it took place on water, and. Yeah. You know, obviously, I don't know when this movie takes place in the future or whatever, but man, that they were both standing on that aircraft carrier, and I was just like, it's insane, but it's totally plausible. It like looks good, yeah. It's fucking great, and I just love the fact that, dude, he's swimming around like a shark with his dorsal fins,
like Jaws or something,
and it's you're anticipating it, and he's locked up. And he can't get off the ship. It's really done well. Like it's a whole great scene that they set there, and like and how they have he's jumping from ship to ship to
that leapfrog scene. Yeah,
dude, it was so good. It was so good, and not gratuitous. Right? It was just it's the perfect amount of action.
Yes. Yeah, just enough, right? Like at that point in the movie where they hook up for the first time, and then you get a battle. So it's like, you're seeing them go at it, but it wasn't the battle, and it was like you said, just enough to kind of keep things moving, you know. Yeah. I thought it was a little like sort of like the way they got away from Godzilla, like at that point. So Kong was like laid out on the aircraft carrier. And they were like, shut everything off, because they were like, once we start moving again, Godzilla's going to come right back. Mm-hmm. And the dude's like, shut everything off. And Godzilla's like peeping them from the distance, and the lights turn off and nothing's moving. And he's just like, all right, they're done. And he fucking takes off. Like, didn't he know he didn't kill Kong? Why did he just go back and fucking kill him? But again, I'm not going to dwell on shit like that, because like they got to keep the movie going. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that was fine. That was a nice little morsel, you know what I'm saying, for that point of the movie. So they continue to plot along. They get to Antarctica. They fucking, you know, Kong, they tell Kong like possibly he has family down in that fucking tunnel.
That's a little girl to lie to him.
They lied to him. Right? You know what I'm saying? Even though, you know, the chick was like, damn, like I don't want to tell him that, but they were like, come on, he's gonna fucking die out here in the cold. Sure. You know, so they kind of lied to him. And you know what? The girl was like, really? Like when the lady was telling her to tell Kong that, but credit to her, she was like, listen, I don't know. You know, they might be his family down there. It's it's only possible she didn't straight up say like, yeah, like lie to him, you know. So it was sort of like, hey, maybe you might have family down there, dude. And once she told him that, he jetted. He went down that tunnel. You saw him swinging and stuff like that. Yeah. And they were like, let's go. They had to get into those little hover vehicles from Apex, you know, to be able to follow him down. And then that was another thing I know we all discussed the other night. They had this whole thing, the whole Hollow Earth thing. Like you said, this guy, this scientist's brother died because they said there's like a gravity well that they have to get through to get to Hollow Earth. And it's like a whole planet's worth of gravity that wound up crushing the previous expedition. Apparently, these Apex crafts are able to handle the gravitational pull. And that's how they're able to go through. So it just looked like they went through like a portal. Like, so Kong is like swinging. Like where he was swinging from, it broke, so he kind of slips and falls down the cliff, and he just looks like a fucking big portal. It looks like a fucking big portal, fucking in the ground. Like, and they fly through it, and you know, and it takes him through to the other side.
Like, but I like how, you know, he's talking to that stuck up girl, right? The daughter of the guy who owns these machines, and she's just like, is he gonna be okay? Yeah. and he's like, yeah, sure, he'll be fine. It's us we gotta worry about. I'm like, how do you know that he's a flesh and bone, he's a flesh and bone being? And just he'll go through that gravity well just fine. Like, what the fuck?
Pretty confident. So
it was a kind of interesting throwback to the Hiva or whatever it's called, those crafts. So back in the older Godzilla films, I think it was in 84, they had the Super X, which was like the jet or whatever that they had. And then throughout the films, when they had Mechagodzilla and stuff like that, as they went on, they had the Super X 2, Super X 3, and everything else. So that's what that vehicle's based around.
Yeah.
Just kind of giving a throwback.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. So, you know, so they get to Hollow Earth, and like when they get through to the other side, like it basically looks like Earth, but like an Earth inside the Earth with its own ecosystem and fucking everything, because there's a sky, there's fucking clouds, there's a fucking sun.
I remember like, we were saying that last
night. We were like, how the fuck is there a sun down there? But there's a sun. And the dude said it like earlier when the businessman went to propose like getting to Hollow Earth, he mentioned it. He was like, that place has its own ecosystem or whatever. Like, so again, it's fantastical. You just have to kind of just take that, you know, whatever. It kind of just looked like an Earth within an Earth, like that had like even the sky, like was like they had land, you know, and it's like you could, you know, if you went up there, it's just weird, but it looked cool. And basically it was like Skull Island in the middle of the Earth, because there was all these other monsters and creatures there and stuff like that. There was a cool little action scene that when they got there, these fucking flying things were about to eat people in those crafts.
Half snake, half, yeah.
Yeah, like that looks so cool. Like, you know, they had a quick little fight. But, you know, EE Prime, you know, shout out to EE Prime. He was saying it. Like, it was like every time Kong got into a fight, like got that first fight with Godzilla and then these fight with these monsters, he always needed like the people's like help to kind of get that win. You know what I'm saying? Like, again, it's not something that I noticed, but then when he brought it up, I'm like, he survived that first Godzilla fight because of the depth charges. He fucking survived these fucking whatever fucking these bat things were because the craft distracted those things with the gunshots and the explosions, and he was able to take advantage. Yeah. And it was like, whoa, well, he does have a point.
He took care of the first one, right? It was the second one is when he had problems.
Because they double-teamed him. Yeah.
What was fun about that is, in the 76 Kong film, he actually fought a giant snake, and that's what that kind of scene represents, kind of a throwback to that, too.
Oh, nice. Wow. Look at that. See, so Easter eggs all over this thing. Like, I know there must have been a lot. Like, you know what I'm saying? Lots of little hidden references and stuff like that. I noticed that when that first fight was over and they were trying to figure out how to get Kong to Antarctica, because they were like, if we move, Godzilla comes back. And they were like, how is he with heights? And they showed the helicopters like carrying him with the wires and stuff. That was in the original Kong versus Godzilla. I remember seeing that.
Wasn't it balloons or something like that they used?
It was.
Or something crazy
big
like
yellow
that?
Balloons.
Yeah.
But it's funny, like, You know, EE's saying, sure, yeah, Kong's needing some help to get through these fights, but you know, Russ was like, yeah, but this man, this poor ape, man, he's been through a lot. Like, they got him chained to a boat. He yeah. almost
tranquilized.
Drowns.
He's tranquilized too.
They sedated, and he almost drowns while he's chained to a boat. Then he has to fight Godzilla and almost drown again. And then they throw him down a gravity well where he has to like hold on for
landing.
Dear life.
Hard
I was like,
landing.
Dude, this guy, well, this guy's been through. He gets go through a lot. This movie
was it? He went through like three times the amount of fights that what Godzilla did in this film.
Right.
You know what? That's real, Brian. I'm glad you brought up that point because it's true. Mm-hmm. He was chained and fucking drugged on those ships. You know, like you said, he almost fucking drowned. Fucking fights Godzilla, so the damage from that. Then exactly going through that fucking gravity well and having the hard landing in Hollow Earth. Yeah. You saw him; he fucking smacked like the mountain, and then just scraping the fucking mountain while he's sliding down it. Fucking trees and rocks going up his dick and ass. Like you know what I'm saying? Got to be getting scraped up. I don't give a fuck how strong you are. That can't fucking feel good. Like you know. So you're right, Brian. Like you know, this dude took punishment. So during these fights, you know.
Yeah, and
I mean, he's still
Antarctica.
Holding his own.
And he freezes his nuts off.
Yeah, he goes, he's down there. He's soaking wet. And then they send him to the coldest place on Earth. What the fuck, man?
They fucking did Kong dirty here, man, in this movie. Shit, man. So, you know, they get by that. You see, like, there's like these sculptures that kind of look like, again, like EE Prime was saying it, like there looks like there's a lot of lore and history like to this Hollow Earth that was not explained here. But hopefully, like if they continue these films, maybe this is stuff that they could get into like in the future or maybe not. Maybe it's just eye candy. But it was just very interesting to see the terrain, to see like the sculptures and the architecture, because it kind of it leaves you open to ask those questions like, well, who built this and who made this? And if they're all monsters and it's like, how is this like that? So it just kind of makes the story and the lore very, very rich and a lot of unanswered questions. They didn't have to answer them here, but just to open you up to like, wow, this is a whole other world, basically. It's
maybe
very, very
indigenous people from Skull Island. Maybe they were down there with them. You never know.
Yeah,
I mean,
you never know. So, you know, lots of stuff that they could maybe get into in future movies. Mm-hmm. You know, Kong finds like what he called his home. He finds like a Thor like axe, you know what I'm saying? That looks like I think one of the guys brought up the other night too, which I thought like it looked like it was just maybe like metal or a shard or something, but it actually does look like it's one of Godzilla's fins or something.
It is.
Like
it's his fin and one of his bones, like from an older Godzilla.
Yeah. So and that was some of the lore too that they mentioned, like how these two titans were sort of like their races were ancient enemies. Like, so they must have been battling on this Hollow Earth. And there was some signs of that, because when Kong said he was home, you saw like bones like kind of scattered all over the area. And it wasn't just like monkey bones. You saw like the lizard bones too.
Yeah.
You know, so just through that context and through that exposition, it's like, man, this was a warring race. And he found like that weapon. And he placed it like in a hollow point in the ground, and it caused like the power source that that company was looking for to like light up. One of the guys, I think Jason, you brought it up that how it when everything lit up, it was like in the shape of like a lizard, like it almost looked like.
Yeah, I think that was Dom
Godzilla.
Yeah.
Oh, Dom. Yeah, Dom brought that up the other night. So noticing that like on the subsequent viewings, I didn't notice that at first, but kind of picked that up, and I was like, all right, cool. So there's definitely like a connection. Between those two races, and with Kong doing that and activating that power source, Godzilla was on his way to Hong Kong because there was that Apex company. We actually got the reveal just before the scene where they tested their version of Godzilla, which was a Mecha Godzilla, which we all suspected that we were going to get in this film, but that was sort of like the big surprise that they were leading to, and we found out that that's why Godzilla did attack, because you know, again, he's just trying to take out threats to him, and this company is trying to take out Godzilla and basically replace him as the guardian of the planet, you know, against these other titans.
So to kind of give a quick throwback to what you were talking about there, I know you haven't seen the 2014 film, but when you go to see it, you'll understand something called the Orca, and it's a device that Millie Bobby Brown's parents developed to talk to the titans. and to make them think that they are the dominant species, that we're the dominant species. Mm-hmm. That's how it set shit off in that film. And that eye from Mechagodzilla, it had the sound of the orca inside of it when it was blinking.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what was setting off Godzilla in the film throughout the whole film. Another take back to where we were talking about the Hollow Earth theory. So in, what is it, Godzilla versus Megalon, I think it was, there was a Hollow Earth type thing where it was called Seatopia. And Seatopia actually had indigenous people and everything else that worshipped the gods, kind of like Skull Island. Mm. That all these things were underneath there. So I'm wondering if that's kind of a play on that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Probably another homage. Again, like another Easter egg. Like, again, for those that might have, that could pick up on that stuff, like you, that have watched the old movies, you could kind of see these little Easter eggs or homages and make that connection. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to. Like, you know what I'm saying? But it's cool that if that is, that they threw that in there. Because it just shows they're sort of paying attention and winking at that longtime fan, which is awesome. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, Kong finding that weapon, they found that power source, they activated it. And it basically alerted Godzilla. Like, Godzilla was able to sense, you know, that power source activating, and he fucking uses his atomic breath to fucking, in Hong Kong, blow to drill to hollow fucking Earth. You know what I'm saying? So that was another thing that by the time we got to that point in the movie, you know, again, the Hollow Earth fucking entrance was in Antarctica. This dude's in Hong Kong. He makes his own fucking entrance. No mention of the gravity well at this point, you know what I'm saying, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he basically drilled with his atomic breath a hole all the way down to that Kong's temple where they were at. And basically from there, the fight was on. You know what I'm saying? Kong, he goes down the hole to confront Godzilla. He's got his weapon. And then the big fight happens. Apex, with that power source activated, the daughter fucking is able to harness that, you know, with the technology, and they're able to replicate the power source. Because that was the thing with Mechagodzilla, they tested him against another monster, and they,
the skull crawlers,
they mentioned that they've only been able to get Mechagodzilla to like 40% like power capacity. Like, if he uses his big weapon or whatever, he just automatically shuts down. So that's why Apex was after this power source, because apparently this power source would be able to power Mechagodzilla indefinitely. And that's what happened. They were able to replicate it. I did like that the dude that was working with this guy was like, hey, like, we should slow down. We don't know how this is going to affect the Mecha. You know, like, kind of wanting to take precautions, and the fucking, this dude was like, nah, fuck that. He's like, put your shit on, fucking use the power source, and, you know, and threw caution to the wind, and look what happened. Using that power source, also, they were sort of uploading, like, data from, like, Ghidorah, right? The three-headed monster, like, they had the, like, the computer connections to, like, the skull, so, I think that's what they were using to sort of...
It's a throwback also to like older Godzilla when they had a DNA computer and stuff from the first, I think it's the first Mechagodzilla.
Okay.
And they took the bones, like in the original back then, they took the bones of the 54 Godzilla and they made it the Mechagodzilla out of those bones. And then basically it's the same thing kind of set up in this film where Ghidorah, they used its head in that or some sort of a bone somewhere, and it went rogue just like Mechagodzilla did back in the day.
Okay guys, another quick timeout so I can invite you all to the Cool Table. Please pull up a chair. The Cool Table is a podcast hub for like-minded content and shows, including favorites like Enter the Realm, Breaking the Mold, Nerd Rage Radio, Stasis Lock, Shattercast Uncut, Toy Detox, Building Up to It, Fresh Communication, Beer and Bolts 40K, and this very show, Verbally Challenged. You can find and like the Cool Table page on Facebook to stay up to date with all the latest content. Subscribe to all these shows on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or your favorite podcast apps. Join the Cool Table today.
Yep. And so, and using that power source, which again, it comes from Hollow Earth, that it must have some sort of effect on these Titans, and using that power source, and again having Ghidorah's head or brain or whatever data they were getting from its corpse into Mechagodzilla, the combination of that, basically they lost control. It kind of reminded me of
Pacific Rim.
We said that. We said the correlation was there, but I think it's Transformers. Was it Age of Extinction when they were using Megatron's head when they were making their own Transformers, and because
when they're making Galvatron and all the other ones,
yeah, and because they were using Megatron's head, like the head, like the programming infected the human Transformers that they were trying to make and made them bad and shit like that. Right. So it kind of, to me, it was similar, like them using Ghidorah's head or his remains to feed whatever they were doing into Mechagodzilla. It affected Mechagodzilla and made them lose control. And using that power source, so that was another funny scene in the movie, like the dudes monologuing, you know, to Millie Bobby Brown, and these dudes like, you know, the humans are gonna be the apex predators once again, and fucking Mechagodzilla
swiped out,
just fucking swipes them out, you know what I'm saying? And it's funny because Bernie was like, oh man, I wanted to hear him finish his speech or whatever.
his phrases were so damn funny.
It was just funny, so, like that, you know, like he didn't get to finish his speech.
Yeah, so. I forget what I was watching. It was a couple days ago. I mean, I was reading something, but like supposedly King Ghidorah, he's got the three heads, but in order for those heads to communicate with each other, they have to use telepathy.
Telepathy, yeah, like because the neck is so long and whatever.
That the signals don't go back and forth, yeah, fast enough or whatever. But, so I guess maybe they were using that telepathy to communicate with that Mecha Godzilla or something.
Could
like
be.
That.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah, there was some sort of interface going on with that, and it just went wrong once they plugged in that power source from Hollow Earth, and so they lost control. So, you know, we get to the fight. So now basically round two, Kong versus Godzilla in Hong Kong, which was so awesome. And again, you know, kind of reminiscent of Pacific Rim because, again, these giant beings fighting in a city atmosphere, and you're seeing these city, you know, these buildings getting knocked down and smashed. And of course, you could just imagine the collateral damage with the humans and all that stuff, even though they didn't really dwell on that here. You did see some of it, but it wasn't graphic or anything like that.
We just know that they're going to die.
You know they're getting crushed and shit.
Well,
but that was
Godzilla's
cool.
Breath is just chomping everything down and Kong just jumping on every building as he's running.
Yeah. And wow. You could see here, like in this habitat, Kong had the advantage now, where Godzilla had the advantage on the water. Here we saw a lot of Kong's agility, how he was able to use the buildings to his advantage to kind of climb up and jump off and kind of drop kick Godzilla and use his feet and, you know, swing around. And plus he had that axe, you know what I'm saying? So he gave Godzilla the business here in this second fight and stuff like that, which was pretty cool, you know. And so they kind of went at it, like Jason said, you know, Godzilla with the atomic breath. A couple of points got, you know, Kong wasn't even letting him use it, which was kind of cool.
Right, that was cool.
But you know,
Bowie smashing him and everything else.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it was so good. And again, the special effects, the way the city looked, the way the buildings getting smashed, these two titans going at each other, it all looked excellent. Like there was nothing that I could look at to be like, that looked like shit. You know what I'm saying? Like
exactly.
They did a great job here, and Kong got the basically one round two, as the character said. You know what I'm saying? Looks like round two goes to Kong. You know, using that axe. He basically was able to hit Godzilla, like, and to knock him down into one of the buildings and basically knocked him out for a few minutes there. So that was cool. So they're like one and one. And then they eventually continue to fight, and Godzilla just gave this dude the business. You know what I'm saying? Like, Kong tried. You know what I'm saying? But Godzilla is called King of the Monsters for a fucking reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, and he proved it here. But again, like, I dug it because, again, these two titans being Alpha Titans, as they kind of described them, you would think there could only be one, but because of the battle, I feel, you know, and you see, you know, Godzilla roaring and then Kong roaring back at him, even though Godzilla had him down and defeated, you could sort of just feel the mutual respect between the two titans.
Exactly,
you know,
like Godzilla didn't kill him.
He didn't kill him.
I find interesting because he killed the Motu things, right?
He killed all the other stuff. Yeah,
and yeah, and then in the movie in the middle, which I need to rewatch, but yeah, he didn't kill him. It's like he was like, dude, I fucking beat you, and just that's it. You're beaten.
Yeah. He walked away. He walked away. I was ready for him to go fucking atomic on him, like, you know, so fucking decapitate him. And he let off and he walked away. Uh-huh. And Kong was like critically like hurt at that point. Like if it
his
wasn't
his shoulder
for,
was all out and everything else when he hit the building. Yeah.
Dislocated shoulder. He was all, you know, Godzilla tore up his chest with his claws and stuff like that, you know. So he was really badly hurt. On the verge of death, and they used one of those heaves to basically like a defibrillator. They used it to restart his heart. At this point, Mechagodzilla and Godzilla were going at it, and Mechagodzilla taking the advantage. And that was another good fight, again, with the effects and everything looking excellent. And just those kind of, you know, because he's a mech, those kind of mech-like things like you saw in Pacific Rim, like one shot in particular, like you see Mechagodzilla jump up and the rockets go off and he like rocket punches fucking Godzilla. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that shit was pretty dope. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, and there was a couple of times he did that where he kind of used the rockets to boost his momentum to smash Godzilla like into a building or something like that. So that shit all looked good. Like, I thought that was good. And when we got the toilers before this movie debuted and we got the toiler from Mechagodzilla, like, and I saw that toy, I'm like, that shit looks like trash. I didn't like the way the toy looked, so it didn't give me high hopes for the movie, but he looked great here. The fight was great. He tore Godzilla up, and they brought Kong back, and this is exactly what I thought before the movie even debuted. I'm like, they're going to fight. You might get a winner, but they're going to have to team up and take out another threat. And that's exactly what it was here. You know, they had to basically team up because Mechagodzilla was too much for either of them. So teaming up now, you know, they have that mutual respect. They were able to, you know, revive Kong using the heave. And they gave Mechagodzilla the business now, kind of teaming up. And he gave them, you know, he hurt them a little bit, both of them, even fighting them two-on-one. But the two-on-one advantage was too much. And and Kong, he kind of redeemed himself, because even though basically Godzilla won, like the fight between him and Kong 2-1, you know, Kong beat fucking Mechagodzilla, which beat Godzilla.
He whooped his ass.
He whooped his ass. Mechagodzilla, technically, he was about to kill Godzilla the same way Godzilla killed the Motu in the first one, opening his mouth and about to shoot the fucking atomic laser. And Kong came out of nowhere, just pulled the head back. Like, that was awesome. Like, I'm sure, like, people probably cheering in the fucking movie theater.
I did. I jumped up in the theater when I saw that shit. I was like, yes!
Yeah. That I could picture that, like, in the theater. Yeah, everybody like, yeah, you know? And that was cool. Just the team-up fight, you know, they fucking... And Kong, using that axe, fucking tore Mechagodzilla up and then eventually ripped his head off and, you know, let out that big growl.
It was awesome. The axe, though, is interesting. The axe didn't make a dent in it until Godzilla charged it up.
So yes.
It was kind of interesting.
Godzilla charged up the axe, and which basically let Kong, you know, tear up the mech, and which shows that, like, they needed to team up to defeat this threat. You know what I'm saying? And then, you know, so again, the threat's over, and, you know, Kong kind of collapses because he's fucking beat. You know, Godzilla was down, and... You feel the ground rumble again, and you know Kong gets up, and it looks like they're gonna, you know, they get confrontational. But it was like a respect thing. You know, they looked at each other. Godzilla let out that roar, and he turned around and went back to the ocean.
Well,
you know
Kong also dropped that axe too, right before he did that. Yeah,
he dropped the axe. So mutual respect there, as you could see, and obviously, like I guess through here, Godzilla's okay with letting Kong be out there and roam around. And Kong realizes that Godzilla is not an enemy, and I guess is somewhat of an ally now. Who knows what they'll do for future movies? Not that they won't ever go at it again, but they left this one here, like, boom, mutual respect. You know, Kong, technically he won, but Kong, you know,
he was the savior of the film, dude.
Godzilla is the winner between Kong, you know, the fight between him and Kong, but you know, Kong got redeemed in that final fight there, and they basically, it's almost like you could all just square it away. They're all evened out.
Yeah, it's a smart way of doing it, right? It's a smart way of doing it so that, I mean, because the only controversy of this film is whose side are you on, right?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, I like the way they did it. I mean, either side now has an argument to say which one is better, but in all fairness, they're equal. So, exactly.
So, and they pretty much ended it at that. Like, as you saw at the end of the movie, there was a new... they built a new facility in Hollow Earth where they could kind of watch Kong and keep track of like his whereabouts and what he's doing. And that's basically where the movie ended up. Godzilla off into the ocean, and you know, who knows? So I don't know if they're planning on doing any other movies from here, but I mean, again, This is one of those movies I feel like it's not a masterpiece. Don't expect the fucking, you know, this shit to be winning awards at the Grammys or the Oscars or whatever it is fucking next year. It's not that type of film. This is a movie you just turn your brain off and fucking enjoy what they're giving you. Because even the basic plot to kind of get these two titans together, it was serviceable. You could kind of pick it apart a little bit. But again, like, to me, this is not a movie to be picked apart. This is a movie where they gave you exactly what you wanted, which was Kong versus Godzilla. And I think the fight itself was pretty satisfying. What do you guys think in regards to that? Do you think you got your money's worth, quote unquote, you know, with the, because there was a lot of hype, man, Kong versus Godzilla. Like, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of hype behind this. So this could have very easily, you know, been like, oh, this is trash. They didn't do these characters justice at all. I felt like Brian, like you said, they did it right. Like they, like both characters were able to get over. You know, Kong could, I mean, Godzilla could kind of keep his King of the Monsters moniker, but Kong's no slouch either. And honestly, before this, I was like, Kong doesn't stand a chance. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I remember that meme floating around. Like, guys, I'm going to try my best, but it's just a fucking giant radioactive lizard. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, what can I do here? You know?
But and they I just want, and I want to say too, like, obviously, the fight scene. We already talked about the first one, but the second one, where they're all three of them. I feel like it was not gratuitous. Like, it was not overdone. It wasn't like. It wasn't like they were fighting exactly for 20 minutes, blow for blow, two super beasts. Which one's gonna eventually tire out? I mean, it wasn't a boring fight, right? It was just nice and concise with the little breakups here and there. Like, we've seen those other movies, like with the big burly bads at the end going, and it's just like, oh god, we know the good guy's gonna end in this. Why stop? Stop flexing your CGI muscles. Let's move on with it, right? But I thought this one, it wasn't boring. Again, it was really done well, I think.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I think their trap would have been if they would have tried to draw this out, like, even more. And watching, and it's funny because, like, it's like I watched it, like, on my own, like, once it was out there, like, I think that Thursday. I didn't watch it that Wednesday, but I think I watched it Thursday. And then watching it again, like, in the watch party, and then watching it again with Jesse. So I'm like, I didn't picture I would have watched this movie three times in less than a week. Right? Like, you know what I'm saying? But it was enjoyable. Like, it was enjoyable. The fights are cool. And I'm like, it's eye candy, man. Like, I can't fucking complain. Like, again, I like Pacific Rim because of this type of stuff. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you just gotta give me enough story to explain why shit like this is happening, and then I want to see this shit happening. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's it. And I feel like they hit a home run in that regard as far as the fights. And I didn't know what to expect. I thought it was just going to be maybe one big battle at the end, but the way they kind of gave it to you, like a round one or round two, and then the fucking big shit at the end, I thought it was awesome because it helped with the pacing of the movie, and it didn't make it feel like, oh, come on, like, enough of this. I want to just get to the fight. It's like they gave you story and then action, and more story and then action. And then, like I said, that last half an hour, 40 minutes is just like, bang, there you go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I dug it, man. I dug it. I mean, if I'm going to give it a score out of 10, I mean, I guess this is like, I would give it, I guess, let's say a 10 for the fights, but as a movie overall, like, plot, whatever, I'd probably give it a 7, you know, which I think is, like, solid, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, if you want to just score it for the fights, I would say it's fucking maybe like a 9 or even a 10, you know what I'm saying? Because, like, again, the CGI and the fight in the city and and the way it all turned out, I mean, it was excellent. I mean, it looked really, really good, you know? So, where are you guys at?
Nice. For me, like, to kind of give a rough idea on the film, I definitely give it like a 9 or 10 when it came to all the fight scenes and CGI and stuff like that. And then the story between the little girl and Kong was phenomenal.
I thought that was a very good.
That was probably one of the best things in the film for me.
Was the heart, basically, of the film right there.
And so, you know, looking at everything, so to kind of give you a rough idea, so. In the 4 days it's been released, it's made $285,400,000.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I just looked up box office.
In theaters, I guess?
Yeah, it's out in theaters as well.
That's just in theaters in 4 days.
That's pretty damn good considering movies aren't at full capacity if you're going to see the theater and stuff. So that's, I think that's pretty impressive. Wow.
Yeah. And so, like I said, for fights and all that other stuff, I give it like a 10.
Yep.
Critically, if I'm looking at it, I just like you, I'd probably give it right around like a 7, 7.5 for the other story stuff, because you can kind of tell, because all the reshoots and everything they did, you can tell they were trying to go sometimes when you look at it and you break it down, they were kind of going some spots in one direction, but then they went to another.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of changed stuff like that. But just for the pure aesthetic of all the paybacks and everything else from like all the old films, the homage stuff, I definitely give it a 10 on that one. So I'd probably say it's right around a 7 or 8, basically.
Between 7 and 8, yeah. And then, you know what, honestly, if I would have probably been able to pick up more of the older references and stuff like that, I'd probably scored a lot higher too. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, it's like the way I'm able to pick up on the stuff like in Zack Snyder's Justice League and stuff like that, because I'm like such a fan and I know the previous material like like this, you know. So that's sort of like where you are with this particular subject matter. So I definitely get it. You know, where are you at, Brian?
So, I mean, I'm tempted to go 8.5 all around, but I'm very generous with scoring. So, but I want to say an 8. Because although the plot was a little goofy, right? And obviously there's this whole Hollow Earth unexplained, which is probably what's knocking it down. It had a plot. It had a reason. Every event that took place had a reason for why.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And so, and that's what makes it a really enjoyable movie. And also there's a lot of rewatch, you know, potential for this, you know, because I'm thinking back to my Justice League score, and after hearing the guys talk about it on the Nerd Life Syndicate, and I think you and Nick did a show today, and with a bunch of others, I can't remember now, so many, but it's like, you know, I had that one at an 8.5, and I want to back that one down simply because I really don't want to watch it again over and over. But like this one, but still a solid movie, right? But this one is like, I mean, this one I feel just
you could watch it again.
And you could just throw it on it and have it in the background and just be watching it. Yep, exactly.
It's good, and all the characters are engaging. The dialogue's not fucking stupid, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, this had all the potential to be a Michael Bay film, right? Where it's all action with a bunch of nonsense in the middle with no plot whatsoever, but this had all three of those all together, right? I loved it. I thought it was good.
You there's some people that might even be of that opinion and might feel that way about it. Like remember I told you before, like that dude on Twitter, it's like, I saw this a year ago and now I could finally speak about it, and it the movie is straight garbage, but the fight is incredible. Like the fights were incredible, but the movie itself, like the plot, is like straight garbage. So I kind of went into that like with this mentality.
And
but
I did too.
I was like, no, it was fine.
Like, and I did too. And I watched it, and I was like, yeah, whoever said this, he's got to fucking bug up his ass around something.
He's one of those that is watching it probably to be super critical of it and break it down. Because honestly, like I said, I could break down the fucking plot holes and this and that, but it's not. This isn't that type of fucking movie. This is one that's like, you know, you got to turn your fucking brain off. Like, you know,
Godzilla
films
historically haven't had a huge plot. Him go around destroying shit.
Exactly. You know, fucking how much plot do you need? You know what I'm saying? So,
and that's what's interesting too. Like, if they are going, to make more of these movies with these characters, it's gonna have to get so much more far fetched, because otherwise, what are you gonna do? All right, guys, here's another movie of a guy stomping on a city. I mean, go watch it if you want to.
It's been happening since 54, so it's still going. Yeah. I mean,
well, it's like I mentioned sort of at the top of the show, like the evolution, how Godzilla 2014 sort of started it like on a kind of very realistic sort of tip, and like now we're full-blown fucking fantasy with fucking the Earth within the Earth and fucking flying hover cars and all this shit. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they kind of did that with Godzilla Tokyo Wars, where they went like far fantasy Matrix type shit.
But once stuff starts getting like that, then I'm losing interest. It's like, all right, whatever.
I mean, I can understand the whole Hollow Earth thing, because I think they left the plot holes of stuff on purpose. because now that they have Kong at the end of the film, remember that was actually supposed to be a after the trailer scene, basically.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking that they're going to explain more in Hollow Earth now. If they're going to do another one, I hope they do. So.
They should, but I mean, dude, like now, I mean, we got this, right? We got Kong versus Godzilla. Now we could get another, you know, Skull Island 2 or whatever, King Kong 2, and they could now explain that and maybe go a little bit more into that mythology that we got a taste of here, like seeing like the architecture and Kong's home and the weapons and all that stuff. Like that's stuff they could get into.
Notice they call him Kong, not King Kong.
Yeah, just Kong. Yeah. And I like so that too because
I have a feeling they're probably going to be doing that later.
Maybe you know, like an evolution or something. But I mean, I dug that. Like, and then hopefully they do continue. And watching this, like, it definitely made me want to go back and watch Skull Island beginning to end, and definitely watch King of the Monsters. you know, maybe I'll do that today. It's still relatively early. Got some time.
Could maybe King of the one Monsters of those is in. One of my favorite films out of all of them.
Like, so I'll watch that one first then. Since I've seen some of Skull Island already, I kind of already know what to expect of that. But so I'll watch that one. But again, like I said, this was a fun romp. I enjoyed it. It was fun to hook up the other night and watch it with you guys and a few others. And kind of almost, it's almost like that theater experience that, you know, you're together with your buddies and you can bullshit, you know, and but you don't have to worry about, you know, people shushing you because, you know, because you're in a movie theater and stuff like that. So that was cool. And I definitely look forward to doing more stuff like that, not only with movies and stuff, but like I said, with WrestleMania and the Impact pay-per-view coming up at the end of April. So, all right, guys, I really, really appreciate you guys taking the time and helping us break all this down. And, you know, like I said, I thought it was a fun romp and it was a good time. And hopefully anybody else that's out there that watched it and is listening, hopefully you enjoyed it as well. So before we sign off for the evening, Brian Brank, why don't you let the people out there listening know where they can find you on social media?
Oh, you can find me at Brankalizer on Instagram, and also tune in to the various shows on the Roma Collectors YouTube channel. That's where I'm at.
All righty, Jason.
You can find me every Thursday on the Nerds Have Spoken podcast. You can find me in the Roma Collectors group as Jason Lowry. Same thing on Instagram, which I hardly ever post anymore. And you can also find me on Xbox as Clutch2345.
Well, thank you both again for taking the time. As for myself, you can find me at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all at HarrikinBX. Remember to check out Breaking the Mold and Into the Realm. I should have said that the other way. Into the Realm and Breaking the Mold, Mondays and Tuesdays, respectively, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Realm of Collectors YouTube channel. And once again, a big thank you to everybody that downloads, streams, listens, and supports Verbally Challenged. Really, really appreciate it. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave me that coveted 5-star review. Really helps the show out. And don't forget to check out our like page on Facebook.com. It's Facebook.com/Verbally Challenged. Give us a like there as well. We appreciate that. And as always, we'll be back very, very soon with a new episode. So until then, take care, stay safe.